podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, September 5th, 2020. This is episode 1725. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy is brought to you by LastPass. Let LastPass improve your employees' experience while safeguarding your business from cyber threats. LastPass is the number one password manager. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to find out how they can help you. And by Adobe Sign. Business needs to keep moving, whether people are working together or apart. With Adobe Sign, working remotely actually works. Learn more about what Adobe Sign can do for your business at adobe.com/businessmoves. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, you know, all that jazz. Everything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'd love to talk high tech with you. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. Well, you know the drill. Maybe you don't know the drill. You can Skype me. Skype out. We'll do it. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Is technology scary? I've been wondering this. We have a lot of movies about technology gone wild, you know, Terminator. There's a lot of movies about computers, you know, War Games, and computers just kind of, you know, gaining. I think the thing that scares us most is that, like, they'll gain sentience. They'll be like aware. That's scary, I guess. HAL 9000 seemed nice at the time. Seemed like a nice computer at the time. Didn't seem like a bad guy. Kind of helpful. Could play a really good game of chess. And then it locked Dave out of the pod bay door, man. That's not cool, man. Not okay. Technology, I think, is neutral. I don't know. Is it? What do you think? I think it's neutral. I think it's... I think some people would argue, oh, no, technology is always good. And yeah, when it comes to things like, I don't know, zippers, those are good. Light bulbs, those are good. Although, I guess, you know, you can always, there's always the counter argument. there's a counter argument on zippers I won't go into, but there are some gentlemen who prefer not to wear zippers. There's also the issue of light. You know, we're not, our biology's not used to light between sundown and sunrise. And so, you know, all this light, especially the blue kind, blue light, really bad. I mean, there's that. You could argue that there's some technology that seems pretty bad on the face of it, maybe the atom bomb. But there's still an argument there. I think it's basically neutral. It's what we do with it, right? And I was thinking about this morning in the shower, which is my favorite technology. Thank you, Archimedes or whoever, for figuring that one out. Nice job. We needed that. That was a good catch. Good find. Shower, bath. Actually, I've been reading a great book called Clean about the history of bathing. He talks about the Middle Ages. He said some historians call it 1,000 years without a bath. it's a fascinating book. You know, our attitude toward cleanliness has shifted back and forth. Now, right now, we're all about being clean. Wash your hands 20 seconds, right? Isn't that weird? We're learning how to wash our hands like we didn't know. Like you have to have videos and new Apple Watch coming out sometime any minute now, maybe even this week. It's got a little hand washing routine in it. Ah, I see you're washing your hands. Would you like some help? If you ask your Amazon Echo to play the hand-washing song, it'll sing a song for 20 seconds. A really terrible song that makes you want to wash your hands faster. I think medical technology, that's probably good, right? Well, yeah. I think it's what we do with it. And that's one of the things that has made my career, really. It's always been the principle behind what I do, and I've been doing this now since the 70s. Wow. Long time. Which is, I like technology. I love technology. I like to play with it, right? But I also think it's important to understand it and to use it intelligently, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't think if you don't understand it, then there's a tendency to say, oh, it's magic. It's magic. That's probably not a good approach. It isn't magic. It's science. Technology, if you really think about it, is scientific theory made whole, made real, which is really cool. I'll give you a good example. The theory of relativity. Now, you would think, well, that's blue sky. There's nothing that can do with that, right? We wouldn't have GPS if it weren't for the theory of relativity. GPS satellites have to account for the fact, that they're moving and that they have to adjust for the fact that they're at a different gravitational plane. It's all sorts of interesting things we wouldn't be able to do without even stuff that seems so blue sky. So technology wouldn't exist without a deep scientific understanding. And that's the thing. If you're scared of technology, well, I understand. I don't blame you, I guess. But surely we can figure it out together. So I guess that's kind of my job is to help you understand it, help you use it. Most importantly, because you know what, people are going to use it against us if we don't learn how to use it ourselves. So it's good to understand it. It is being used by governments and marketers in all sorts of ways that we may not approve of. So it's important to understand that. That's what we talk about. And it's also, I mean, I have to admit it, the reason I got into it, it's the toy store. We're waiting to hear from Apple. There's strong rumors now. There'll be a new iPad Air, which will be a lot more like the iPad Pro, but I guess a lower cost. So that's good. They have a Type-C connector instead of a Lightning port. It'll have those squared edges that the iPad Pro has. I don't know what else. I mean, these are all rumors, so we take it with a grain of salt. New Apple Watches, plural. New Apple. There's a new iOS coming and a new watchOS. Got a new public beta of the iOS right after the developer beta came out. Beta 7. Got that yesterday. Yesterday. So I'm thinking that's probably the signal that we're about to get the new iOS. iOS 14, iPad OS 14, Watch OS 7, because it's half size, so it's only half its numbers, half the numbers. And if we're going to get that, I have a feeling Apple's announcement is going to be this week. That's just my feeling. I have a feeling right here. There have been rumors that it might be Tuesday, September 8th. So that'll be interesting. I'll keep you up to date on that. Also this week, the new Microsoft It's Not a Phone comes out. The Duo comes out September 10th. That'll be interesting. Samsung Galaxy Fold, they had their big event. They said, yes, you'll be able to get it September 18th. It's that silly season. And this, I think now more than ever, we need to talk about technology. Because some of this stuff, that Galaxy Fold 2, $2,000. The Duo's $1,400. New iPhones coming, but probably not till October, I'm going to guess. Those will be, what, $1,000, $1,200? Who knows? Apple really opened the door to very expensive stuff. So you can see it's all headed our way. And that's my job here is to help you, know what to get and what not to get. Help you figure it all out. 8888 Ask Leo. I'd like to be your guide, if you don't mind. 888 877-927-5536. When I talk about stuff, it will be written as as it is spoken, so it shall be written by our scribe, James DeRuvo, who's scribbling as I speak, writing this down even as I speak, and putting it up on the website, techguylabs.com. And that's really so that you don't have to write it down or pay attention. You could just let this show wash over you. Let's just let it wash over you. And then at some later date, if you say, you know, he said something, I think I want to know what that was, you can go to the website. It'll all be there. And it's free. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's open the lines. Our phone angel, Kim Schaffer, is ready. She's ready for your call. Give us a ring. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And there she is, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer, our phone angel. Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy.
Hello. How are you doing?
I say it's going to be hot here.
Yeah.
I believe it's going to reach into the 90s today.
Yeah, hundreds in some places. They're saying like 109 in Napa.
Well, we have Sue is listening in Henderson, and it's 116, so.
Oh, thank you. I'm good with 90, I guess.
Does the local news still do that where they go out and they fry an egg on the sidewalk? Do they still do that?
I haven't seen that in a while.
That was when I was a kid. They would, it's so hot you could fry an egg on the sidewalk. Why would you want to do that?
Just to show people how hot it is.
Okay.
Okay. It's a good example, I guess.
Yeah.
I've never tried it myself. Have you?
No. I don't. Even if I could, why would I want to?
I don't know.
There's a whole cookbook on how to cook with the heat from your car engine.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't remember anyway, but you could wrap up stuff in tinfoil, put it in your car engine, cook it up. It'd be nice when you get to the end of your trip.
Now, I didn't think you were supposed to actually drive with it.
Well, that's how you get it hot.
I thought you just turned it on and let it run.
Well, that's... No, you should do it on a trip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe duct tape it down?
Now they make, Scooter X says in our chat room, now they make reporters stand by the bank with the digital clock that says it's temperature. Look how hot it is. That's probably true. They're, you know, young people today. No initiative. Fry something on the sidewalk.
I don't know. You know, I see a lot of them out there standing in hurricanes, which I think is pretty ridiculous.
That's always silly. That always is silly.
Just
and I felt bad.
Inside.
My good friend Erica Hill used to work with at Tech TV. She somehow seems to get the standing in Times Square assignment on CNN all the time. And I feel bad for her.
What, on New Year's Eve?
No, all the time.
Oh, all the time.
Like that was, look how empty Times Square, at least in the early days of quarantine. Look how empty Times Square is. I thought, get inside. What are you doing out there, girl? Get inside. It's not safe out there. All right. That's enough of me. Enough about me. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
Who do you have for me?
Cameron's in Lafayette, line one.
Looking
to start up a new career, it looks like.
Cameron is? Oh, thank you, Kim. Hi, Cameron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
First time.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you since I was 16 and my first car only had AM.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's kept me alive, that AM button. Thank goodness. Did you have a button for the tech guy?
I do now.
It's called the Amazon Echo. So what can I do for you?
Well, I've spent the last 15 years in office administration and clerical, and now I'm looking for some new work, and I wanted to break into IT. I've got a bunch of friends that I've talked to kind of do a little surface research on certifications, but I'd love to know which ones you think would be good for me to get into entry-level support.
Yeah, and so that's the first thing is what part of IT do you want to work in? IT is a very broad term, and it's everything from, setting up networks, sysadmins, security. But you said one part of it, which is actually an important part, probably the part you see the most when you're working, which is the support guy, the IT support person. Do you want to be somebody in an office or do you want to be on the phone? What kind of thing do you want to do?
Either. I mean, of course, with the circumstances, I would like to have an option of some remote work. But the work that I've done, there's always been an element of call Cameron to fix that.
Yeah. On the blank. So you're already halfway there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the first thing I think for this, the basic one is the A+ cert. That's from CompTIA. COMPTIA. And so the reason these certs exist, everybody knows, every IT person knows that it really isn't a good measure of how good an IT person you'll be. But you don't have any experience. You know, 5 years experience would be the best thing, but how do you get the first 5 years? They have these tests, and you pass the test, and you show at least that you have certain knowledge. Although I have to say, often the knowledge that you learn for some of these tests is either outmoded or you'll never use it. Nevertheless, you know, it's an imperfect system, but this is it's all we got. And then if you're looking for an entry level job, they'll often be looking at, well, do you have some certs? And the key is to get the certification in the, as I said, in the area that you want to work in. For support, the basic cert is A+, the A+ cert. And it's, you know, it's a base level certification. I would say the ability to, take that test and pass it is a great start. There are several ways you can learn the content. There are certainly, you know, nowadays everything's on YouTube. There are certainly plenty of online videos that you can use for free. You can go online to Amazon and there'll be CompTIA books, manuals. Those you want, because at least those will give you an idea of what the questions are going to be. In fact, practice tests are really great, as with any tests. I don't know if you, when you were in school, if you took the SATs or any of those achievement tests, that's how you got into college.
Yeah, I was able to go to, remember Barnes & Noble?
Yeah.
And get some
practice. Yeah, you get books. Yeah. So similar to that. They say you can't study for the SATs. You can definitely study for the A+, because it's all factual. It's not, if a car is leaving the station at the 5:33 and traveling at 25, it's none of that stuff. It's all very factual stuff that you need. And some of it is oddball, which is why you really want to do it. Now, once you get the A+, you might well want to take a couple of others, because, of course, if you have two or three certs, a future prospective employee is going to say, oh, I like this. So basic computer support is A+. CompTIA folks have a lot of other certifications besides A+. You might look at those. There's Network Plus for networking. There's Security Plus for security. There's infrastructure. There's, cloud. Maybe, it just depends what you want to do, right? I mean, it's a broad field. I have to say, it's also a really good field right now. The economy is tanking in so many ways. But IT, especially now, the ability to keep the servers running and the networks going is super important. So I think this is a great field to get into right now. So you could get books at the bookstore. You can watch videos online. There's also schools. I don't usually recommend the technical schools. They tend to be very expensive. But there are online technical schools. We have a sponsor, itpro.tv, that's very good. That is a little less expensive. And maybe it just really depends how you learn. If you need to have engagement, that kind of thing, I'd look at those. But boy, good luck, because that's a great field. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Webster on a chat room said he went to ITT. How much did ITT cost you, Webster? I'm just curious, because I think it's tens of thousands of dollars at least. And while you learn that, and if some people need to be in a classroom environment, right, that's how you learn. All of them will allow you to work during the day and take classes at night and that kind of thing. Webster spent $26,000.
Yowza!
To go to ITT. I think, honestly, I would try the other less expensive methods first. Mm-hmm. And then if you might say, I really – there are practice exams – for instance, IT Pro TV has two levels, but the higher level you get practice exams. That's always nice. The nice thing about IT Pro TV, and again, they're a sponsor, but the nice thing about them is they have everything. So you can, if you want, you can try classes in different areas. Because honestly, you think you want to do desktop support right now, but you might find out, oh, you know what I really love is security. I love trying to break into systems or whatever. And you don't know that till you get some experience of it. So what I would do is start watching videos on YouTube, try to get an idea of exactly what you see yourself doing in a year. And then you can decide from there what the best way to learn is going to be.
Okay. Again, thank you so much, and hey, thanks to the chat room.
Good luck. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah,
I'll call back when I get hired.
Yeah, that you know, as always, and anytime you're new in a field, it's really hard to get that first job because you haven't proven yourself. That's why the certs are actually a nice jumping board. Once you get that job and you're good at it, man, you're golden. You'll have work for the rest of your life.
Thanks again, Leo.
You're welcome. Take care. Good luck. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. Yeah, LastPass. Thank you for sponsoring the podcast, LastPass. Thank you for sponsoring our studio. We really, you know what, though? It's a good relationship because I've been sponsoring LastPass. And in fact, Rebecca recommending it for more than 12 years. 12 years. That's when I started using LastPass. I persuaded Steve Gibson to take a look at it. He even talked to the founder and took a look at all the code and gave it his thumbs up. And I'm kind of blown away. That was 10 years ago. Today, we're using LastPass everywhere. Steve does, I do, at home, and we use it at work, LastPass Enterprise. LastPass surveyed 700 IT and security professionals across a range of industries recently, from financial services to IT to retail. Almost all of them, 82%, said their business has been exposed to risk due to poor identity and access management. That's what they call it, IAM, identity and access management. That's what LastPass does. LastPass can help you manage identities and promote good security behaviors while your employees are remote, which is a really challenging environment. It starts with, of course, LastPass's strong password storage, AES 256 encryption. It's never decrypted anywhere but on your device. Your LastPass password is never transmitted anywhere. Only you have it. LastPass never has access to it. That secure password storage is really more than passwords. It's a vault. I use it for my passports, for my driver's license, social security numbers. It's easy and safe for employees to share logins using LastPass, not Post-it notes. Single sign-on, employees love it. It's a fast and easy way to sign on without passwords. And, of course, your IT department has complete oversight, shadow IT, enforceable policies across all password-protected accounts. It's always key to know who's using what where, especially when your employees are remote. That's what LastPass does for you. You should try it right now. It's the number one password manager. It's been my number one choice for more than a decade. Let LastPass securely manage your user's identity, letting your employees work efficiently without making your business vulnerable to cyber threats. Go to LastPass.com/twit. Thank you, LastPass, for your support. Thank you for supporting us by going to LastPass.com/twit. You're supporting yourself, really. LastPass.com/twit. Hello there, Mr. Scotty.
Hey, Leo.
Thank you for interceding with me of the iFi folk.
Oh, good. You got that email.
I did. I meant to respond, but I'm slow with email. So I did get it, and I will send them my old one. And
yeah, they'll just...
So that makes sense. You know, normally I assume it's got a Type-C charger.
Right.
It's got the circuitry to protect itself. I can plug it into anything that has Type-C.
But apparently...
Apparently not.
If you give it too much juice...
Yeah, it should have. They should have protective circuitry in there. But I guess it's conceivable. You know, power delivery now, you can get... I don't know what. You get almost 100 watts coming in there. And I can see how that might overwhelm whatever they've got in there. So
whatever they've got in there.
Probably what it is a fuse, and it's probably blown. And probably the first, all they do is open it up and put a new fuse in, I would guess. But
they'll just send you another one.
Lesson learned. I will not plug it into a PD or anything. I'll just, they say it's designed. See, the cable that it comes with is this long.
Yeah, I know.
So it's designed to do type A to type C. In other words, right. not more than, 5 watts.
5 volts, 1 amp.
Yeah, 5 watts. So, yeah, clearly 95 watts is probably too much.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, thank you.
I didn't know whether you got that or not. I know you get so inundated with email. I think you have somebody sort of...
No, I don't.
Filtering your email,
no,
right?
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
No.
I thought of your sister or
used to be. That was years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't. I just have automated little scripts, but, you know. I saw it. It's not that I didn't see it.
My email gets through. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, your email definitely gets through. You go into the important folder.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, although I have to say, I did this morning have the Stellias in my Amazon basket.
Did you really?
So close, yeah. Actually, I was wondering, because it's $1,000 for their DAC.
DAC and amp.
An amp. Probably and worth it, right?
If you buy them together, you get a pretty substantial discount.
Yeah. Probably worth it, I wonder.
Well, I haven't tried their amp yet, but I'm about to.
I'll wait. Wait, I'll hear your review. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you a man who could play any wind instrument you can throw at him. Well, don't throw it at him. It'll be...
Please not. Please
just
not.
Hand it to him. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. He is a contributor at Tech Hive, a professional tubist. Is it tubist?
Tubist. It is tubist.
Tubist.
Yeah, I know you're... Yep.
Drop the A.
That's right. Just like flautist.
Like a flautist. But he's not a flautist. Well, you could probably play the flout.
I can play the flout.
Yeah.
The flute, yes.
He is our beloved home theater geek. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going great. It's good to talk to you. Every week, Scott joins us, talks about TV and surround sound and stereos and all of that. I have to say I'm very, very happy because we had guys come out this week to hardwire the house. They're crawling up in the attic. They're crawling underneath the house.
Oh,
running Cat 6.
Heat?
Hey, I don't care.
You're paying them.
I'm paying them. I gave them a nice tip. Yeah, they're going to take the weekend off because it's too hot, but they'll be back.
Hardwiring with?
Cat 6.
Cat 6. Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah, and then, of course, Wi-Fi. So we're going to get some nice, five Wi-Fi zones and all that. And they said the nice thing about this, because they're Cydia types. They use a home theater system called a Rackness. And they said the nice thing about this, if you want to do audio, whole home audio at some point, you could do it.
Yeah,
and I thought, I don't need that. I got Sonos or Google or whatever. What's the advantage?
Of doing wired?
Whole home audio.
Well, you'd get better quality.
Yeah.
Wired, as you and I have talked about many times, wired connections are always better quality.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi, wireless Wi-Fi or Bluetooth is getting better all the time.
I am getting Ethernet put behind the home theater.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
good.
So that everything will be wired, including the Sonos base station and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you're getting the content in from the streaming provider, whatever it happens to be,
right,
in the cloud,
right,
having it come in by wire assures you the best quality to start with. And then if you distribute it wirelessly throughout the house, okay, you're going to lose a little bit. But the fewer wireless points you have, the better the quality is going to be.
The stereos will all be have Ethernet near them. I have I have three different.
Oh, and I bet you're having the Ethernet ports put into wall plates.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, that is. So
I know. My wife.
It's
all started because Lisa works at home now. You know, as many of us do. I get to come into the studio, but she's working at home. And she said, "I've had it." I said, "Yes, dear." So her workstation has a four Ethernet ports
on it. Oh man!
She said, "I want four." I said, "Honey, you only need one." "I want four." "Okay, you got four."
All right. All
She's
right.
set. She's set.
We've got. I have strung Ethernet cable around our house.
Yeah,
literally along the baseboards and around the ceiling. I mean, you know, I didn't do what you did.
It's expensive.
I wish I had, but
it's expensive. It's not as expensive as I thought. It's about. I think they said something like $500 a port. Mm. And they have to be up in the attic, and they have to be under the house, and they have to.
Yeah, that's a big job.
Yeah, and then so it'll be fun. It'll be fun. I think it'll be
exciting.
You'll
get much better quality performance, especially from streaming video.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you stream from Netflix or
better.
You know, any of those, you know, streaming it hardwired to your device, your Roku or your Apple TV or whatever, is going to be much
always better.
Yeah. Always better.
And I do have Sonos devices that have Ethernet ports on them. So, I mean, they're going to be wireless network, but they use their own proprietary network to do that. So
It's a mesh network, as I recall.
Yeah, I'm going to presume it's going to sound good. But, you know, the really good, the stereos where I have nice speakers, those will all be wired.
So. See, that was another point I was going to make was – you know, we talk about, well, wired gives you better quality. But, of course, that also depends on the quality of the speaker at the end of the chain, right? I mean, if the speaker isn't very good, then who cares?
Right. Right. That's why I rely on you. Unfortunately, I spent my wad on wiring it. I won't be able to go buy those nice Elacs. That I was hoping.
Oh, Elacs are
boy, they're not that expensive.
Serious.
Yeah.
No, they're not that expensive. Yeah. That's a serious value proposition there, really.
Ooh. I like that.
So
E-L-A-C. That's Andrew Jones' company, right?
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't own it, but he's the speaker designer there.
Yeah.
He used to work at Pioneer, one of the best speaker designers in the world, period. He used to design speakers for TAD.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Those were like $80,000 speakers.
Yeah. Well, you want you want a gray beard, right? You want somebody who's been doing this a long time.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not like speaker technology is hard to keep up with. You want somebody
hasn't changed much in 100 years.
Yeah, you want somebody who has experience. Like, well, you don't want to use cherry wood in there because it'll resonate with the, you know, want that kind of thing.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, one of Andrew's real strengths, in my opinion, is knowing which components, the driver, the crossover, the cabinet, the bracing, you know, all these different parts of a speaker, which ones do you compromise if you have to hit a certain price point?
Right.
You know, he used to make $80,000 speakers, so it didn't matter. He used the best of everything in every aspect of the speaker. But when you're trying to make $500 speakers, you have to choose something to compromise. And he is a master at choosing, well, this is the most important. We really can't compromise on the tweeter. It's really got
to
be.
This has to be good. Yeah.
This has to be good.
Yeah.
We can maybe compromise on the components we use in the crossover, but we design it in a specific way. You know, maybe we can use slightly less exotic material for the cabinet, or, you know, he knows where to compromise and where not to get the most out of any budget, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I applaud him. I respect him so much for that ability, which is why his speakers sound great, even the least expensive ones.
I also feel like streaming is here to stay. Like,
not
just for music, but for TV. That most of the stuff, content we watch, I figure in the next maybe in 5 to 10 years, will be coming in over the internet. So it's probably worth it to have a good, solid internet foundation.
Absolutely. No question about it. That's exactly right. I remember a question I got several weeks ago asking if over-the-air broadcasting was doomed, right? Were we even going to have it in 10 years?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
It's a good question. I think we will.
Yeah.
Because not everybody has broadband internet into their house.
But you do see local over-the-air stations working to find other forms of revenue. You know, they charge money to the cable companies and the over-the-top companies. I think they want to keep operating, and certainly the big television networks. But look at NBC's a good example. They're owned by Comcast. They're putting a lot of money into over-the-top. Comcast is an internet company, the biggest in the country. Yep. And things like Peacock, their new streaming service, really kind of show you that I think even the TV networks feel like, well, you know, there may be broadcast television stations for some time to come. But we've really got to look at over-the-top. We've really got to look
absolutely.
At internet.
Absolutely. Most local stations now have streaming services as well.
Yeah, we have our local Channel 4 here just went free on their app. They have a free streaming app, which is good because that's where we go to find out what's going on with the wildfires and things
like that. Right,
right, right. Scott Wilkinson, I completely hijacked your segment. TechHive.com, you can read all about his stuff. You got any big reviews coming up?
some nice bookshelf speakers coming up in a couple of weeks.
Okay, awesome. He's got a good job, right? Gets to listen to music for a living.
Yeah, man.
Scott Wilkinson. You can email him with questions, scott at techguylabs.com, and he'll be back here next week. And this time I won't get in the way. I won't.
No problem,
get
man.
Get in the way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls continue right after this. Well, you know, our son is doing distance learning in one room, and then Lisa's, you know, doing Zoom calls
doing
all day
work.
In another room, and potentially I'll be doing shows from another studio, home studio. So,
are you going to put together a studio?
Oh, I have one just in case because we don't, you know, last year the power was out here for a week, so we created a emergency plan, and our other hosts are broadcasting from their homes. So all of us are looking at, you know, and I've got the same can of cameras and lights and I got all of that. So, yeah. Good internet. I just wish I didn't have to go through Comcast.
You know, it's funny. We're doing a virtual high holidays this year.
Right.
You know, my wife and I are the music directors of our community, and we normally put on a big concert for the high holidays. And we can't do that this year, obviously. So we're doing it virtually. And we've got, I think, 8 different people from different locations. And I'm saying to all of them, have a wired connection to your router from your computer. This is critically important. You know, if you're going to be, presenting part of the program. Most of our music is pre-recorded. We've been spending the last few weeks pre-recording most of the music. A couple things will be live, but only when it can be one person or in my case, Joanna and me together playing music from one location.
You can't synchronize.
You can't synchronize.
Because of the latency.
It's really, really hard.
Yeah.
So we've done a couple of these virtual things. You've seen these, I'm sure, you know, on YouTube where you've got a virtual orchestra or a virtual group or something playing. They each recorded their part separately with playing to either a click track or a scratch recording of the piece, and then they send that in and somebody edits it all together. You've seen those, right?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. So we've done some of that. Now I have some experience doing that, which is pretty cool. We're going to do one piece called Abigazint, which is to your health or got your health, sort of in these pandemic times. And
that's perfect.
The singer sang her part.
Oh, neat.
Brought it in. I play a trombone solo and we're having it synced up. It's going
to
be cool.
It's beautiful. I was listening to some Schoenberg Lieders yesterday, actually. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love those Lieders. So
Schoenberg is great.
Gorgeous stuff. So should I buy the Stellias?
I've been mixing. All this mixing I'm doing has all been on the Stellias.
Makes a big difference.
They're just so gorgeous. They're just so gorgeous. It's a tough call, man. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
But it's basically a stereo system.
Yeah.
I don't know. These hi-fi mans are pretty good. I have the HE560s.
Have you done any sort of direct comparison between them?
Well, the hi-fi man sound 10 times better than anything else I have, including...
You haven't tried the Stellias.
I don't have the Stellias like you.
I wish we lived close by.
I would love to. That's the problem. I'd be buying them. Well, but I trust your judgment. Yeah. These are
If you like the hi-fi mans...
I love the hi-fi mans. There's definitely a difference.
Probably, unless you got money to burn.
Yeah, don't. Nope, I just burned it.
Yeah, you just burned it on that Ethernet installation.
Can you stick around? Sure. All right. Yeah. We'll talk to you in a little bit. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go to Springfield, Illinois, and say hello to John. Hello, John.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I am doing great. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I have a message from Windows here. believe it or not.
I got a message for Windows, but go ahead. Yeah, okay.
it's saying that quote, your version of Windows 10 is nearing the end of service.
Yeah.
Restart and install the most recent version. So I went through the process. They say I'm on 1809 right now.
Right.
And then when I go through the process about maybe 50% of the way through, it says your PC settings aren't supported yet for this version of Windows 10. And then it goes back to the beginning. And then a couple of days later, I get the same message again.
Yeah.
That I'm nearing the end of service.
So what Microsoft does, Windows 10, remember, Microsoft said, is the last version of Windows. There's not going to be a Windows 11. But it's really just a shell game they're playing, because there are new versions of Windows twice a year now. They're just all called Windows 10, and then that's followed by a number. 1809 is the feature update that came out in September 2018. And what Microsoft is starting to do now, incredibly annoyingly, remember that Windows 7 and Windows 8 and Windows NT and all that had about 10 years before their end of life. So Windows 7 just ended in January, 10 years after its release. They said, we're not going to update it anymore. You need a new version of Windows. Very annoyingly, Microsoft has decided to make these feature updates a 2-year cycle. That's why they're telling you yours is about to run out. It hasn't yet. 1803 did run out, and you need to go to 2004 if you're on 1803. But you have raised the single most annoying issue, which is that some people cannot move on. And are you telling me, Microsoft, that I have to buy a new computer? Is that what you're telling me, Microsoft? It's incredibly annoying. And I don't, people love Windows. I understand it. I don't know why. I really don't know why. And Microsoft seems to be acting in a more and more hostile manner towards its users. So you've got to figure out why you can't update it. When you had 1809, did you turn off updates? Because in theory, you would have updated it again at 1903 and then 1909. But I don't think so.
I just kept it going, and whenever it needed an update, it did, like maybe once a month or so.
Those monthly – so this is the other thing that Microsoft really confuses people with. They do security updates or critical updates every month. It's called Patch Tuesday. It's become there was 130 patches last Tuesday. It's vital. You got to do that. And that's every month. But then every 6 months, they do these feature updates. Sometimes they're minor. The next one, supposedly, which is the one you're probably going to go to, which is 20H2. They've gotten rid of these silly, because they realize they can't tell people to get Windows 10 2009. That's just going to confuse the heck out of them. So they've decided to call it Windows 10 20H2, second half of 2020. That's the new naming scheme. And that will be, I'm told, a minor update. So sometimes they're more, I have to say 2004 was a minor update, except for the people it broke things for. It certainly didn't add a huge amount of features. This is just incredibly annoying. What you have to figure out at this point is what's gone wrong. The one thing you could do, this is the most extreme option, is to download, but once you've got Windows 10 on a machine, any machine, you don't need a serial number ever again. Microsoft keeps track of the machines that are running Windows 10, and those machines have what Microsoft calls an entitlement. You can put Windows 10 on there, and you'll never be asked for a serial number. It'll just automatically authenticate. So what you could do is wipe the, obviously back up anything you want to keep, but wipe the drive and install a clean 2004. That's probably the best bet.
Okay. So, I mean, what's the big deal with 2004?
Nothing.
What does it do for me?
Nothing. I'll tell you a few things. It's got a new kind of semi-transparent user interface. Okay. And if you use Linux, the new 2004 has the new Windows Linux subsystem version 2.0. Those are the biggest changes.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Oh, geez is right. I'm furious with Microsoft. I honestly cannot say more strongly, no one should be running Windows ever again. And you know what? Microsoft even thinks that, by the way. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing this. They're so hostile. What they're really doing is, I don't think they're doing it intentionally, but what they're really doing is creating such chaos that companies that need and use Windows will start running Windows in the cloud. I think this is Microsoft's future, is they want you to run Windows installed on their machines in the Azure cloud, because they'll keep that up to date and you'll never see this problem. And I think, watch, I predict in the next couple of years, Microsoft will say, yeah, I know, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to keep Windows up to date. So what if you did this? It's only $15 a month. That's what they're going to do. It's just very frustrating. So there are workarounds for this. There's two possibilities. One, it's weird that it said your settings. I don't know what your settings are.
Yeah, it doesn't say what setting it is.
That's another frustrating thing. It when it refuses to give you 2004, it says you can't have it, but it doesn't tell you why. It doesn't tell you how to fix the problem. So one thing to check, it may be the reason you didn't get 19.03 and 19.09. One thing you should check is to make sure that your internet connection is not a metered connection.
Okay.
That's in the settings, in the control panel. And the metered means that you get charged for bandwidth. And Microsoft had to do this because these are big downloads. Windows 10 2004, the newest one, is an 8 gigabyte download. And so if you're paying by the byte, it could be expensive. So Microsoft, this is the one loophole that gets you out of updates, is if you say you're on a metered connection, then it won't update you.
That's in the settings in the update?
In the network settings, yeah. Or the yeah, actually, I think it is update. But look and see if there's anything you can figure out. Because if you can, you know, for instance, unplug all USB, unnecessary USB devices, hard drives, docks. You know, you should just have
I have a camera and a external hard drive.
Unplug all of that.
Okay.
Just temporarily, just during the update. And so you should only have a keyboard and a mouse plugged in and a monitor, obviously. And try the update then. That might – what it's sensing something. Maybe you have incompatible hardware. Maybe you have drivers that it can't update. Ultimately, the ultimate fix would be to install Windows Fresh. And you can download it from Microsoft. They have something called the Windows Media Creation Tool that'll make a USB key. You need a 16 gig USB key. They'll put Windows 10, the full version with 2004 on it, and then you just install that. You might even be able to just install it on top of your existing Windows. If not, you'll have to wipe the drive and install it there. And that'll get you up to date. And you do kind of need to do this. Otherwise, you're going to stop getting updates. And I think that means that you're going to be in an insecure position. So get the first to unplug everything and try it. You know, make your machine as vanilla as possible, right, before you try the update. Try it one more time. If it still doesn't go, there's all sorts of reasons. And I wish they gave you a better diagnostic, because you could fix it if they would tell you why. But they won't. Then failing that, download, everybody should own this. Every Windows user should have a USB key with a Windows installer on it. And you should keep it up to date. Always. That's just a necessity. Get that. It's free. You don't need to enter a serial number or anything. That's nice. But once you get that, then you can try installing on top of your existing version. If that works, you're golden. If not, then you're going to have to back up, wipe the drive, and start over. Ay, 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 ay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Yeah, I'm really sorry that this is happening. So the first thing, just to reiterate, is to check the metered settings. Make sure it's not metered.
Okay.
You kind of want to figure out why you didn't get previous updates, right? Why are you still on 18.09? And so metered would be one way to do it. You can only defer them, in theory, with Windows 10. You can only defer it for a month. So somehow it got deferred for 2 years. By the way, 20H2 isn't out yet. So technically, you don't have to actually do anything until 20H2, but you're going to keep getting that annoying warning. So.
Yeah, it came up 2 days after it failed.
Because you haven't done it.
And I got, yeah.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah, it sounds good. Well, I'll do all that.
Thanks so much, Leo.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening all these years.
Thank you.
All right.
You're the best, Leo.
All right. Take care. Bye, John. So frustrating. And I know you guys love Windows, and if you're, you know, if you're a gamer, you should love Windows, but otherwise, actually, more and more, I don't know if you need Windows, to be honest with you. What am I doing here? I'm putting this guy in the big window, and then I'm putting the clock. Well, that's kind of a cool shot right there. It's a Scott with a Scott picture in picture. And then I'm putting the clock.
Right, yeah, the here. Clock would be
there. You very go. Nice.
Thank you so much. You That's go. Always great.
All yours, my friend.
Thanks, everybody. Nice to see you all. Just a note. The High Holidays, the community that I and my wife are the music directors of, is called the Sholem Community. It's a secular Jewish community, not religious. Mike B. Asked me about if we were Reform, and the answer is no.
That's secular. Even more Reform.
It's more Reform than Reform.
Super Reform.
Super Reform. It's more.
So what is you're celebrating the culture of Judaism?
It's Yiddish culture.
Yiddish culture.
Yiddish in particular, otherwise known as Yiddishkeit.
How interesting.
Yiddish culture. And social justice, very concerned with social justice.
Right on.
We are affiliated with what used to be called Workman's Circle, now called Workers' Circle.
Oh, you're commies, eh?
Well, some of us may be, some of us may not be. We're very concerned with social justice, yeah. Let's put it that way, and yeah. with labor rights and workers' rights. So, yeah. You know, That's what it is. If anybody's interested in streaming the High Holiday service, you can go to Sholem, SHOLEM.org, and find tickets there and so on and so forth. We do a Yitzker, which is a remembrance of those who have passed died in the past year. So you can submit names to be read. During that part of the program,
that's nice.
We do have music, lots of music. Joanna and I are going to be playing some live and some pre-recorded, and so you know if you're looking for a High Holiday service that's not religious, if you're looking for one that's religious, look elsewhere.
Do you have a rabbi?
We have in Yiddish, we have what's called a Wegweiser. Which is equivalent to a rabbi, but it's not religious.
That's so weird.
I know.
I'm a Christian, but I'm not religious. I just like to light candles, smell incense.
Sure.
I guess that makes sense, right?
Sure.
Truthfully, it's the rituals that seem to be the most
comforting. Well, and we do have we do follow a few rituals. For example, the blowing of the shofar.
Right.
Which I do. That's one of my jobs in this. In this time of the year is to blow the shofar. And that's a ritual, you know, that goes back thousands of years.
Oh, yeah.
I call it, it's not really music. And that's a thing. I actually did not list in my instruments that I play in the musicians union. They ask you, you know, what instruments do you play? And I made a big list. But I didn't list shofar because it's not really a musical instrument.
You don't play songs with the shofar.
You don't.
Any more than you do with a conch shell.
Correct. Although I do, I actually play music on the shofar as well, but not, you know, the traditional use of it and the conch shell is as a ritual device. There are several different calls that the shofar makes, and one of them is the call to assembly. So, hey, everybody, far and wide, living out in the hinterlands, come on up. It's time to gather. The other is the mournful call, which is to remind us of the mourning of the people who have died and also the mourning of the struggles of the Jewish people and so on. And then the call to battle, which is, you know, the call to battle, kind of obvious. And at this time of year, which is supposed to be reflective, internally reflective, personally reflective, the call to assemble, I think of as the call to attend. That is to attend your inner life. The call to mourn is obvious. The call to battle is twofold. One is to battle injustice in the world, but also to battle your internal demons. We all have internal demons, right? Things that are inside of us that keep us from achieving our full potential, from doing the best that we can do. And so that call to me also reminds us to do battle with those inner demons and to do better next year, which is part of the whole reason we have the high holidays. So all of that is by way of saying, if you're interested in a non-religious, Yiddish culture-oriented, social justice-oriented high holiday service, go to sholem.org, and we would love to see you. In the time I have left, I really wanted to quickly mention something that Aaron K. Mack talked about. He says he's got a 10-year-old Denon receiver. He's got a Roku and a cable box feeding it, going to an equally old Sharp Aquos TV. Assuming the Denon supports ARC, A-R-C, C-E-C, whatever acronym, if I were to get a new TV that did 4K streaming, could I push the audio backwards and have it be decent? I don't know whether that Denon receiver has ARC. If it does, then you could push it backwards with ARC, so to speak. If it doesn't, you could push it backwards by connecting an optical cable from the output of the TV, which undoubtedly has an optical output, they have for many years, put that back into the receiver. And if you get a new TV, then it certainly would. That might only give you two channels. Some TVs, the optical output's only two channels. It depends on the TV. So that would be a question mark. But he's asking, you know, should I get a new receiver that supports 4K? You know, if your Denon is 10 years old and you're getting a new 4K TV, I would. Of course, it's a matter of cost.
Oh, you need
as well.
To. I did.
But I think you need to.
Because you won't see anything going through. It won't be 4K.
No, no. You'd have to connect your Roku and your cable box.
Direct to the TV.
Direct to the TV and use the TV as a switcher.
Right.
Which is never not a good idea.
That was my sad revelation when I upgraded to a 4K TV, is I had to buy a whole new chain of stuff.
Of stuff.
Everything. Yeah. You know.
Well, the Apple TV or the Roku could be a 4K. I don't know if he's got a 4K.
You need
Roku
everything 4K. You need a Roku
you
Ultra.
Do.
You need the top of the line Apple TV.
Yep. Cable box won't be 4K.
Right.
So there you go.
Thank you, Scott. Have a great week.
You too. See you next
week. Take care. Bye bye. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm not going to go off on Windows, but after our last call, I just brings sadness to my heart. People are suffering with Microsoft Windows. There's lots of reasons you might have to use Windows. Boss might require it. That's often the case. It's widely used in business, easily the number one operating system for desktop computing everywhere. You might have to use it because you're a gamer and all your favorite games or PC games are on Windows, not on Linux or Mac. You might have to use it because there's a piece of software you love that's Windows only. But if you're not in that, you know, I think fairly narrow range, I can't understand why anybody would put up with Windows. I'm not saying get a Mac. This is not the old Windows versus Mac battle, because I honestly think a Mac, although that, you know, that is a good operating system, it's certainly better than Windows. I still think it's too complicated for most people's needs. My preferred complicated general operating system is Linux by far, far and away. But for most people, they don't need a general purpose computer. We didn't have a choice until recently. You had to get that. And most people bought Windows PCs. The total reason Windows is dominant, it's not because it's technically better in any way. I don't think any, even a dyed-in-the-wool Windows fanatic could argue that Windows is somehow technically better than anything else. It's not. It's Obviously not. It's just dominant because it's dominant. It's inertia. People were using, you know, in the early days of computing, people used Windows computers at work, so they got them at home. That's the default. Oh, yeah, I'll get a... Those Macs are too expensive. I don't understand them anyway. I got one at work, so I'm going to use it. But those days are gone, so don't run out and get another Windows PC. Please, do yourself a favor. Think about how you use it. And if most of what you're doing, you can do in a browser. In fact, I bet everything you're doing, you can do in a browser. Then you should not get Windows. You should get a Chromebook or an iPad. Either one of those would be more secure, more reliable. You know, I don't get calls from people saying, my iPad's warning me that I have to update it or it's not going to be, they're not going to, but it won't update it. No, you don't get that. Chromebook either. No. The thing is, they're limited. They're very limited. And so if you're used to a, you know, general purpose computer, you can do anything you want with. Well, they're limited. But most people don't need all of that power. And all with great power comes great complexity. You don't need it. So if you don't need it, don't get it. Save yourself some money. Save yourself some hair. You won't be pulling it out as much. Save yourself calls to the tech guy. Patrick in Fallbrook, California is next. Hello, Patrick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing, my friend?
I'm great, Patrick. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great myself. Hey, I just want to first of all say that you saved me a couple of years ago. I went overseas, and you saved me from blowing out the electricity in the...
like I did, you mean?
Yes, unfortunately.
Yes, I blew out... let's see. When that trip was done, I had blown out an old hotel in Venice, a cruise ship, and a hotel in Budapest. Three different places because I was using a 120 volt adapter instead of the right 240 adapter.
Sigh.
Anyway, what can I do for you this time?
All right. I love to hate myself, but I've got an old iMac. It's about 2008 or so, and it's old one, got 4 gigs of RAM, so forth.
Okay.
And I'm looking to repurpose this machine.
Okay.
And what I'm thinking I'd like to do is put a new SSD inside of there and then upgrade it to swap out the OS.
You can at least get to High Sierra, and there are ways around even that to get you up to Catalina. I'm not sure that's advisable, only because the reason Apple doesn't want you to go past High Sierra on that old hardware is just not going to run as well. 4 gigs, though, is good. Right. That's a good amount of RAM. I would just say, yeah, get it up to High Sierra, put a nice SSD in there. Now, before you run out and buy an SSD, go to YouTube or iFixit.com and watch the videos on upgrading the hard drive in your particular model of iMac. Because I think a lot of those iMacs, including that older one, that's a tough proposition. It's way below the screen. So you have to take the glass off the screen. You have to open it up, dig down into it. It's not designed for upgrading the hard drive. So watch those videos. Make sure you're comfortable with that brain surgery before you do it.
Oh, sure, definitely. And let me ask you one more question, if I'm
sure.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
I'm wondering, too, if I take this old iMac and I throw a Linux on it, I'm wondering what your idea is on that, maybe what version you might recommend on that.
Yeah, I have, as much as I use Linux, when I buy a computer for running Linux, I always buy a PC. But Dell is one, Lenovo is another. I'm sitting in front of a Lenovo running Manjaro. But I do know that there are many Linuxes that work fine on Macintosh. I just don't know what the issues are. So I would do a little Google on Macintosh, iMac, Linux. I know people have installed my favorite version of Linux, Manjaro, on iMacs. I just don't know. There may be some issues. There may be things that don't work, that kind of stuff. For some reason, right. I think it's because Apple is so proprietary. So they have hardware that is unique to Apple and maybe isn't as well supported in the Linux world. The way Linux works, I mentioned Linux earlier, so let me explain. It's a free open source operating system. It was created in the 90s by a Finnish graduate student. And he did something very interesting. He gave it away. And it was perfect timing because the internet was about to explode. It was 92, and there were developers all over the world who started working on it. Open source had just really taken off. And so it has become a community project that is freely available. And there are many, many, many flavors. They call them distros. Some are designed more to work better on Macs and some not. The issue is you've got the base of Linux, but then you have to make it work with any particular kind of hardware. And so you want hardware that has a lot of Linux users using it, because it's likely that the drivers will be supported, the trackpad will be supported, the sound and all of that. And Apple, because it's so proprietary and because the machines are more expensive than PCs, I think has a smaller percentage of Linux users. But do a Google, you know, write the, you know, iMac 2009 Linux in Google and see what people's experiences have been. You maybe go on the Reddit Linux subreddit and say, here's my model iMac, get very specific. Anybody install Linux on it? What are the pitfalls? What should I be aware of? But I think in many cases you can just use Manjaro, which is a very nice version of Linux, Manjaro, and install it and, you know, see if it works. The nice thing is it's an older machine. It's probably not your main machine, I'm guessing. And
No, and I'm using it mostly for, like, you know, light web browsing things.
Yeah.
Some photo editing on there, not much.
Linux is nice for older machines because it's, well, you know, it supports older hardware. So, you know, a lot of Linux users have older hardware. So that's the thing to understand about Linux. Unlike a commercial operating system like Windows and Macintosh, it's community created, community driven. And so it's going to have the best support. It's going to work best on stuff that other users are using, right? That they're incented to keep working. The older hardware, for instance, it usually works well on because it's been around and a lot of people have it and it's inexpensive. So, yeah, good luck. I'm not an expert on this. I've never installed it on a Mac. Manjaro, Zorin, people are saying elementary OS, that looks like a Mac. That's one of the reasons people try it on Macs. But you'll have little things like fan speed, things like that that might be odd that you'll have to look into. That's a good way to repurpose an old machine of any kind, is put a new operating system on it, right? That's the idea. It's a new operating system because the manufacturers of the hardware want you to buy new hardware. They're not going to update their operating system forever. Neither Apple nor Microsoft does that, but Linux does because it's community. They're not trying to sell you hardware, so you're much more likely to find something that'll work well on an older machine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will take some more of your calls in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, one way or another, I'm going to get you. Let's get on to the phone calls. John in West L.A. Hello, John.
Hi.
Hey, John. Welcome to the show.
Well, my original question I solved while I was waiting for you, but I've got another one.
That's why we put you on hold, you know. We figure we gave you on hold long enough, you'll figure it all out on your own.
Anyway, we have a bunch of YouTube people that we watch, and we have subscriptions on them, you know, and we hit the notification bell. And up until a couple of weeks ago, whenever they put out a new video, we'd get an email message, and we don't get anything anymore. The only way we can tell if they put out a new one is to check every one of them every day.
Sounds like you, I don't know. I get notifications still, so I know that the bell still works. I wonder why you're not getting them anymore. Have you looked in your settings, your YouTube settings? Make sure notifications are turned on?
Yes.
Did they, you know, I'm going to leave this, maybe the chat room would know. They say they're still working. Sometimes I'm going to go to notifications here. Choose when and how. So if you click the bell, go to YouTube and log in as yourself. And if you click the bell, you'll then see that at the top of your page, not on a specific channel page, you'll see there's a little gear next to notifications, and you'll see your preferences. Make sure that email is turned on. Make sure your email provider is not sending them to spam. That's another thing you can do. Are you getting the web-based notifications at all or no? You know, the you should see on your phone Push notifications, if you've got those turned on, and you should see on in your browser, you should get browser notifications if you've got those turned on. If you're not seeing any notifications, there might be another issue.
Hit the gear.
And then choose when and how to be notified. And you can select push or email. I have them both on, which is probably not a good idea because my phone will pop up and say, hey, there's a new video.
Get notifications of the browsers turned on.
Okay. Somebody in our chat room says he's heard this issue being talked about. There's something going on with YouTube, maybe. Maybe turn subscriptions on and off again just to kind of kick YouTube, okay. That kind of thing. But they do still work as I – wait a minute. Hawaii Cop says, as of August 13th, Google stopped sending email notifications. Is that true, Hawaii Cop? Can you give me a link to a Google blog post or something? I did not know about this. That's weird that they would do that.
Why? Yeah.
Yeah, why?
The date everything stopped.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm seeing this. This is wild. This is where YouTube. Here's an important note for YouTube channel managers. As of August 13th, YouTube will no longer send out email notifications whenever you upload a new video. So this happened 3 weeks ago. Heads up. Hi, everyone. This is from YouTube Help. Hi, everyone. From Sarah, YouTube employee. Heads up. If you're opted in to get emails about new uploads, live streams, and premieres from channels you subscribe to, they're going away. You'll still get notified on mobile via the YouTube app. So you might want to have the YouTube app on your phone and push notifications turned on. Or desktop via your browser if you've turned the notifications on. If you haven't turned those on yet, you can do so in settings. So here's why, Google says. Less than 0.1% of these emails are opened. And people told us these emails contribute to inbox overload. So this is annoying because you have to turn it on. You have to subscribe and then you have to turn it on. So if you don't like it, turn it off. Who opens these anyway? You just are looking for the notification anyway. We hope this change helps you more easily spot and pay attention to the important emails YouTube sends about your account. Creators, we didn't see any impact to watch time when we experimented with turning off these emails. Oh, that's so annoying. So thank you for letting me know, and now we've let the world know. They don't do it anymore.
Oh, thanks.
You're not going crazy. This is, man. What channels do you watch? What channels do you like?
Lion Whisperer is one of our favorites.
So you'll forgive me. I'm old, so it's okay if I ask this. But normally, I think of YouTube's biggest fans as people like my kids in their 20s. But I think it's really interesting. Do you watch YouTube as much as you would watch television, say?
Not quite, but quite a bit.
It's getting there, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting. What a change. You know, we're of a similar age. We grew up watching TV. YouTube's relatively new, but it's changing how we consume content. And what is it about it that you like, you and your wife like, John? Is it that it's kind of narrow, more niche-y program? Like you like animals and you can see the Lion Whisperer and that kind of thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the type of thing you just don't see on broadcast.
It serves its audiences because broadcast has to be more broad. And the Lion Whisperer, you know, all he's doing is talking about lions all the time. I mean, that's awesome. If you love lions, that's like you're in heaven.
But we can both be in the same room and on our own computers and watch YouTube.
Different channels.
Don't disturb each other.
Yep.
But yet we could even hold hands.
Oh, now you're going to make me cry. That's so cute. So that's what it is. It's personalized. It's TV for you. It's personalized, which is something broadcasts cannot do. That's really interesting. I think this is, I mean, John, you and your wife are terrifying the television networks over this. We were talking about this earlier. They don't know what to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the trick is you can still get notifications, but they are not going to be an email anymore. So if you have YouTube on your phone, you can turn on notifications there. Or if you have a browser, Chrome browser, go to Chrome, go to YouTube, and you could say on my desktop, on my laptop, notify me when there's a new video. So you'll still get a push, what they call a push pop-up, little pop-up window notification.
Yeah.
But they're just not going to, they don't want to send out emails, I guess, because it seems spammy now or something. I'm so glad you called. And it's so adorable to think, what's your wife's name, John?
Judy.
Hi, Judy. It's so wonderful to think of John and Judy holding hands while they watch their videos on YouTube. That's adorable.
He'll be watching a documentary and I'll be watching a cooking show.
But isn't it amazing if you think about it, there's an infinite number of great things on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, my son learned to cook from YouTube. He's 26, and that's how he cooks. He says, well, I said, where do you get your recipes? I just go to watch a YouTube video. So, wow.
I've gotten into geology and astronomy.
Yeah, the science stuff on YouTube's so fantastic. Isn't that great? Well, yep. It's a pleasure meeting you both. I'm glad you called. I had no idea.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad I didn't mess up the computer.
Wasn't your fault, Judy. It's John's fault.
That's my first reaction.
Pleasure talking to you, too. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Take care. Have a great day.
You too.
Be safe.
You too. You're safe. You're at home watching YouTube, holding hands. That's nice. Our show today brought to you by Adobe Sign. I am on a mission to get everybody in the world using Adobe Sign. I admit it's a little selfish. Because I am sick to death. Maybe you are too, of getting in the email. Here's a document. Print this out, sign it, then scan it or fax it to us. It's like, oh, you think that's more secure? You need Adobe Sign. You need e-signatures. E-signatures are legal. They're more efficient. They're frankly more secure and reliable than just pen and ink signatures. Right now, if you're running a business, with all this craziness going on, you got some challenges to face. But no matter what's happening, your business has to keep moving, and that's where Adobe Sign can really help. They have processed now, over the years, more than 8 billion transactions, billion with a B, from millions of signers all around the globe. And what's great about Adobe Sign, it's perfect for small startups to giant enterprises and everything in between. You can support every critical process, whether it's requests for permits and construction planning or health services, internal operations like human resources, procurement, IT. It's across the board legal. It's employee-driven workflows, so it's easy. You can do things you couldn't do with a paper signature. You can enforce deadlines. You can say, you got 1 week to sign this, buddy. You can archive final documents automatically, complete with audit trails. You're going to save time and money and be more secure. It's compliant, enterprise-grade security, compliant no matter what your industry is, HIPAA, FERPA, GLBA. E-signatures protect sensitive information. You can be sure they're both legal and accessible. And Adobe Sign automatically enforces regulatory and policy rules automatically. You can choose from a variety of identity verification methods if you want, including U.S. government IDs, certificate-based employee IDs like PIV or CAC cards. It works with everything you're using right now, including Microsoft, Salesforce, ServiceNow, Workday, everything. And they have great APIs, so it'll even work with your custom software if you've got that. And signers, trust me, as a signer, I can say this, signers love it. You just click a link and sign and you're done. You can even track and manage progress so you know the status of every signature on every document. And if you're still waiting, you can send reminders. You can cancel requests. It's just powerful. Contracts get signed. Loans get approved. Deals get done faster than ever before. Adobe Sign has solutions for any kind of company, from small businesses to global enterprises. Keep your business moving with Adobe. Learn more about what Adobe Sign can do for your business. Go to adobe.com/businessmoves. That's adobe.com/businessmoves. Why? Why? Because business moves with Adobe. Please do it for me. adobe.com/businessmoves. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
My travel man.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. Just got back from the beach, actually.
I'm so jealous. They're closing the beaches here for Labor Day.
Are they?
Yeah. It's like, come on, that's the safest place to be. What are you talking about?
Well, they get crowded, so...
Yeah, I guess if they're crowded.
That's why we went early this morning to beat the crowd. And plus, it's a heat wave down here. I don't know about up there, but it's going to be a... It's like 101 at, I think, LAX today.
Yeah. It's going to be 97 here today and even warmer tomorrow. Yeah. Ay, ay, ay.
You got to go early if you're going to go to the beach, like 8 a.m., go for an hour or two with all the surfers. There's no one on the beach except just surfers.
Oh,
in the water.
Oh.
Anyway, your last caller talking about YouTube, my mother-in-law, she watches so much YouTube now. It's shocking. And I watch a lot of YouTube as well. And actually, I just put in the chat room something I mentioned a couple weeks ago about how to experience a safari, you know, virtually.
Right. We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that stuff is, I mean, you can't find that anywhere else. It's amazing, especially during a pandemic. YouTube is just blowing up because there's so much to do and see. And actually, before we go down to the beach, I look at the webcam just to make sure that the waves aren't too big.
What a world we live in.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I think all of this quarantine thing has had an interesting impact on us because it made everybody more aware of all these things that are out there. And I think after the world's going to be a changed place. It's going to be very interesting.
Well, it's going to be interesting for travel, especially because business travelers would travel halfway around the world just for a meeting and go back home.
Yeah, that's crazy. We can't.
I mean,
do
literally,
that anymore.
I would. I have friends who would fly New York, L.A. to Sydney, spend 7 hours in Sydney, and turn right around. Not even spend a night.
That's such a waste of resources and human exhaustion. And
agreed,
just doesn't make any sense. What'd you say, John?
I said I've been nowhere, man.
He's been nowhere, man. He's stuck at home, man. But he's Johnny Jett, and he will always be our travel guru, JohnnyJett.com. He is struggling along with the rest of us as we're stuck at home. I miss traveling so much. But, you know, I was looking at video from SFO, our local airport, and how they're handling it, and everybody's wearing masks, and there's social distancing. You get on the plane, and it's been sanitized. I'm thinking probably going somewhere on a plane is not one of the more dangerous things these days.
Yeah. It's definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as the person sitting next to you does not have COVID, the chances of you getting it are slim.
Right.
And again, if people are wearing their masks and doing that things, I mean, I've had plenty of friends fly. The reason why I haven't flown is really because I have two little kids, and also there's really nowhere for me to go. There's no work out there.
Well, that's the problem. You get there, and they're going to say, turn around.
And also, I don't want to deal with quarantine either place.
Yeah.
No one wants to quarantine for 2 weeks. You know, we thought about going to Canada to see my mother-in-law. We thought about seeing my dad, but, you know, we can't be that close to him. We don't want to be the ones responsible.
My travel agent and I exchanged emails. I said, I miss you, Jane. She said, hey, good news. Jane Zugsmith at Travel Store. She's just great. She said, good news. At least United's dropped change fees.
That's my title. That's what I'm talking about today.
What happened?
So I just actually put it in the chat room and I tweeted it. So on Sunday, United Airlines dropped a huge bomb, which was shocking and surprising and positive for consumers. So, I mean, because they know business travelers are not traveling right now and that they need to get consumers, the one fee that really irked consumers is the change fee. It didn't cost them any money to change it, but they would charge most people $200.
200? I thought it was 150. 200? Wow.
No, they raised it to 200. It's been 200 for at least a couple of years.
Holy cow.
I mean, it went from 25 to 50 to 75 to 100, 150, 200. I mean, but now they've gotten wise. And I mean, that just shows you how much they're struggling for them to come out with this thing.
Now, this is just going to, what?
No, they say it's permanent.
I thought, oh, this is just for now. They're going to, they'll bring those back. No.
They say permanent. I know those words are used loosely in the travel world, but you know, Southwest has always had it. First of all, they don't charge change fees.
I know.
So if you change your flight, you just have to change pay
the
fare.
It's one of the reasons I fly Southwest a lot.
Yeah, and they also give you 2 free checked bags. But most airlines, especially the legacy carriers like United, American, and Delta, they would charge at least $200 for domestic. So what United did, and this is important, because American and Delta followed up within 24 hours, and then Alaska Airlines, and then just Hawaiian Airlines 2 days ago. But American actually has the best policy out of them all, because United is only for the 50 U.S. states and I think U.S. Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico. American Airlines, and Delta is the same. American Airlines took it one step further, where it's Canada, Mexico, and all of the Caribbean. So, I mean, so if you change your flight to or from Europe, you're still going to have to pay the change fee. And sometimes those are even more than $200. But, you know, for me, I go to Canada a lot, or used to. So I would be booking American because of that, because I'd be able to do that.
By the way, Amtrak dropped change fees in the spring. So, and I like taking the train. And, you know, I think taking the train might be a good way to go. The air is clean. They filter it. If you get a roomette, you're not even sitting anywhere near anybody. Right. We got the last time we traveled, we had a room with a bathroom, which is awesome.
I've done a lot of trains around the world.
I love trains.
If you get your own bathroom, I've done it in Australia on the GAN.
That would be safe.
In Asia on the Oriental Express.
I want to do that.
It's amazing stuff, but Eastern Oriental Express, excuse me. Also, keep in mind these change fees are for regular tickets. They're not basic economy. So if you buy the cheapest ticket, the basic economy, you still have to do the change fee. So what I think is going to happen in the future is that you're going to see the price difference a lot more between the two.
Right.
Because basic economy, sometimes I've seen the price difference like $3 or $20. But now they might be incorporating those fees in there.
They'll build the change fee into.
Yeah, but the airlines say they're not going to, although I watched the Delta CEO speak on CNBC a few days ago, and he made it sound like it was just at least for this year and next year. But, you know, he says it's permanent, but we'll see. But travel, I know you're talking about the airport experience and everything, and clear, you know, the security that we talk about, like, you know, the enhanced, where you can just bypass the long lines. First of all, you get TSA PreCheck, but then you also get Clear, which a lot of airports have it. And their website, I believe, is clearme.com. And LAX, they have them at every terminal now. It used to be they used to only be in like San Francisco and Orlando, but now you find them all over, including in stadiums. So Clear just came out today or yesterday where they're introducing this enhancement on their app where, you know, they'll tell you when to leave your house. So you get to the airport 35 minutes before, because they don't want you hanging out in the airport that long.
Oh, first of all, I don't either.
Yeah, because no one wants to be there because of the COVID. And also most of the stores and shops and restaurants in airports are not open. So this is a good enhancement. It's both on the Apple Store and the Google Google Play Store, and it's free. But I mean, to have a Clear, you have to pay for it. Although they usually give 2 months free.
It's not hugely expensive. $60 a year, or something like that. $100 a year.
And if you have a elite status on Delta, you'll get it for like $99 a year.
Okay.
United actually offering it for free to their top tier flyers.
The thing that's a little disappointing with Clear, you still have to go through the security. You just get to skip the line. So if there's no line, I've seen sometimes the Clear line and the TSA pre-line is longer than the regular line. So you just go on the regular line.
I've never seen that. I've only seen the Clear line long once. But San Francisco is different because they've always had it. They've had it there for
a lot
long.
Of people use Clear in San Francisco now.
Yeah, in San Francisco for sure. But in L.A., I've never seen the Clear line more than like 4 people.
Right.
And the TSA pre-line used to be long. These days, you don't really need it because the security lines aren't that long.
Yeah, I bet.
And actually, the last 3 weekends, August 14th to the 16th, 2.3 million people traveled through TSA security, which is way down what it used to be. The following weekend it was 2.2, and this past weekend it was 2.1. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this weekend. I would think it would be a little bit of an increase, but starting, now the kids are back in school, you're definitely going to see a dip. And that's why these airlines are doing these consumer-friendly enhancements. I mean,
yeah, no one wants to change going anywhere. Yeah.
Now we just need to get the hotels to drop the resort fee, because that one drives me nuts as well.
Oh, those resort fees. Oh, man.
Which I think is a big scam.
Yeah, they charge you $35-$40 a night for nothing, just so you can, yep, get the Wi-Fi and use.
And in COVID times, a lot of the gyms are not even open, and they're still trying to charge you the change fee.
Yeah.
So my advice for that is to avoid hotels that charge these resort fees. Also, email the GM before you go to see if they'll drop it. And also always complain, say, listen, I'm not going to – I once checked into a hotel in Florida, and they charged me $35. I arrived at 10 o'clock at night and left 8 o'clock in the morning.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I couldn't use anything.
Yeah.
You know I couldn't. You can see what time I checked in and checked out.
Yeah.
But they're tough. So the airlines this week, by the way, have announced that they've banned more than 700 passengers because they're not wearing masks. So they're banned until the end of COVID.
Wow.
On each airline.
That's and tough.
Delta's leading the way. They banned over 270.
They know if people don't feel safe, they're not going to fly. And it's vital for their future. Johnny Jett, he's at johnnyjett.com. He's got a great travel podcast, johnnyjett.com/podcast. Also a YouTube channel with 39 questions to some of the most interesting travelers in the world. Thank you, Johnny Jett.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Johnny Jett.
This week I interviewed one of my friends who's like Mr. Hawaii to talk about everything Hawaii, like
someday,
what's going on there, when he thinks it's going to open up, what's it like to live there. And he's just like, he's telling travelers not to go. I mean, this guy works in tourism for more than 20 years. So they're like, this is just not the time to go.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you live in Oahu, you can't go to Maui without quarantining.
Right.
But if you live in Maui or the Big Island or Kauai and you go to Oahu, you don't have to quarantine until you get home back again.
Wow.
Because Oahu is the hotspot right now.
Right.
Even though hotspot to them is like, I think it was 100 and something cases, 160 maybe. Nothing like Florida where it was like at one point, 5 or 10,000 cases. So.
The airlines have laid off tens of thousands in most cases, right?
I'm sorry?
Haven't the airlines laid off tens of thousands of people most cases?
I mean...
So how are they operating? Are they operating very light schedules, or what is going on?
Well, United just announced they're going to lay off an additional 16,000 people. Yeah. So the government gave the airlines money, and they said they cannot get rid of anyone until October 1st. So the airlines are trying to get more money. So they're sending out these press releases saying that, if you don't give us these, we're going to drop these services. American Airlines said they're going to drop 15 airports, but they're trying to get the government to give them more money. So if they do get more money, you'll see them running pretty much regular schedules for the most part. But if they don't get the money, then they're going to really thin down. And it's going to be like that for a while. They're predicting like 2024, I think, Delta Airlines, until they get back to pre-COVID days.
Many countries have national airlines, right? They're government-run airlines. Is that the case?
They do, some of them.
Yeah.
So they're all being subsidized.
Right.
Yeah. So it all depends on which ones. But, I mean, there's a lot – like Virgin Atlantic right now is not a government, but they're trying to get more money from the UK government.
Yeah, sure.
So, I mean, the Middle Eastern airlines are getting money. Cathay Pacific is a private airline out of Hong Kong. Qantas is Australia's big one. So they're all – like Qantas says they're not going to fly long haul until at least the spring next year.
Oh, even
and Virgin Australia has gotten rid of all their 777 planes. They're no longer – they're just a domestic airline.
Right.
They used to – I mean, Virgin Australia was one of my favorite flights to go from LA to Australia because they had this row five that was like your own independent cabin.
Ugh.
But they actually redesigned that. And but these days it's scary out there. I'm just hoping that it turns around and you know, people start wearing the masks and people can at least travel smartly.
I'll tell you what, the first time I travel somewhere, even if it's in the country, but especially if I go out of the country, I'm going to be so grateful. I am never going to take travel for granted ever again.
Agreed.
Because this may be years off. Jane said she's getting some bookings for 2021.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, we used to book a year ahead. So this would be the time we'd start thinking about the fall of next year.
Well, they say for cruises, do not book anything until at least the spring.
I don't even know if the companies are going to be there.
Well, they'll be there. They have enough money to last them that for a couple of years, I think. But
I'm going to wait. I'm not booking for a while. We might just not.
I would book with a credit card 60 days before.
Right. Yeah, you said that.
So you protect.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Johnny. Stay safe.
Right, take care.
Love to Natalie. Take care. Bye. Bye-bye. It's 109 degrees in beautiful Sherman Oaks, California. A Saturday afternoon with Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We used to call that the Saturday afternoon format. A little fire downtown. Well, stay cool, Dr. Laura. I hope you are all right. You got the AC on, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like a nice
balmy 62 degrees inside. Yeah. What do I have in here? 70 exactly. 50% humidity. That seems like a. Somebody was asking, called up to ask about the name of the book I was reading about clean, about hygiene and the history of hygiene and modern hygiene. It's called Clean. It's by James Hamblin, Hamblin, The New Science of Skin. I should warn you, he starts off by saying, I haven't taken a shower in 9 years. And it either goes uphill or downhill from there. I'm not sure. I'm not sure which direction. Line one, Barry, Ulysses, Kentucky. Hello, Barry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You got the Derby coming up soon.
Yes, we do. Hopefully COVID will not cancel that.
Oh,
out.
Man. Well, if you wear a hat with a mask, you're okay.
Yes, I just wanted to mention from one of your previous callers couple that called in about watching YouTube while they're holding hands.
Oh,
that's some COVID love going on right there.
That is COVID love. Oh, isn't that sweet?
It is
so sweet. So, what can I do for you today, sir?
My question is concerning Wi-Fi. My parents just bought the neighboring house. Right in front of where they live now. It's probably about 400 feet. And I tried the Wi-Fi through my phone. Unfortunately, I can't even see the Wi-Fi down there, which was a good problem to have before we bought the house.
You don't want to see the neighbor's Wi-Fi. That's no fun. But yeah, 400 feet's a little beyond the limit of normal Wi-Fi. It's about 150 feet.
Right.
And that's assuming there's nothing in between. So walls, doors, anything with metal especially, that's going to block it. Humans, because we're just big bags of water, all of those things will attenuate or reduce the Wi-Fi signal. But 400 feet's pretty long. So what you need, you want to have Wi-Fi from one house to the other?
Yes.
Yeah. So what you need, there are specialized antennas that will do this. They are usually directional. So Wi-Fi is an interesting technology. It's radio. And it's two-way. Don't forget, you've got to transmit and receive. So anything you do that amplifies the signal has to happen at both sides. It's not enough just to amplify the sending. You got to amplify the sending from both ends, right? So I'm going to send you to a site called, I've sent people to before, called Radio Labs. They sell Wi-Fi range extenders, all kinds of range extenders. And you're going to want to read up there. They have a lot of articles and things because you're going to have to find something that's right for your situation. Do you have a straight line of sight between the two houses?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. What you probably will end up doing is putting a directional antenna on the towards the roof, high up on the first on one house and high up on the other house, and have that connect to the Wi-Fi in each place. But it's definitely doable. But you just, you know, you can actually, there have been experiments sending Wi-Fi for miles, but you just have to have the right kind of antenna. You probably don't want an omnidirectional antenna. You want what's called a Yagi, Y-A-G-I, directional antenna. But again, I would strongly recommend reading up on the site. They have all different, they have big parabolic antennas that are designed to go a long way. I'm not sure what you'd need. 400 feet is pretty far for Wi-Fi. But you're probably going to want to use 2.4 gigahertz because 5 gigahertz is probably not going to be good for that distance. Yeah.
Now, you said I need two of those antennas?
You're going to need amplifiers and antennas at both ends.
Okay.
Because you have to up the sending signal on both sides because it's a two-way signal, right? It's like walkie-talkies. Right. You can't just boost one of the walkie-talkies. You have to boost them both.
Right.
So this radiolabs.com, read up on their Wi-Fi. They have a lot of information. They actually have kind of case studies where they say, well, we had the barn out here and stuff like that. That's what you want to look at.
Okay. Sounds
good. you may or may not need an amplifier if you have an antenna. The antenna boosts the gain all by itself. It's directional, right? So you're aiming it down at that house 400 feet away. And then you need to attend in the other direction. It's not going to be cheap, but it's not going to be as expensive as you might think. It's not horribly expensive.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, good luck. This comes up a lot. This comes up a lot. And it's just, ask an amateur radio operator. they'll know all about it. Joey is in Round Rock, Texas. Hello, Joey.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
I had a question about a PC that I'm trying to build.
Okay.
For like a few months now, I've been trying to save up money for like a $700 budget PC.
Awesome.
And I put together a list.
Awesome.
And so I was going to like read that over to you. And like,
sure. Although let me also, just before you do that, refer you to my friends at PC Perspective. That's PCPER.com. It's an enthusiast, tech news site, and they have something they call the HW Leaderboard. You'll find the menu item right at the top there, where they describe what they would build in various price ranges. And they do have a budget system, which is actually under $500, and they have a mid-range system, which is under $1,000. So you can see what they would recommend. In both cases, they like AMD processors. What do you think? You getting an AMD?
Yeah, I was thinking about either getting the Ryzen 5 2600 or the Ryzen 5 3600.
That's a $200 processor, the 3600, and that's exactly what they recommend. But remember, when you go with AMD, now you have to get an AMD-compatible motherboard. You want to make sure you get the right video card for it. But you're starting at the right spot, which is that key decision. Do I go Intel or AMD? And if money is an issue, it's always an issue, I think AMD is right now a really great price-performance choice. So good pick on the Ryzen 5. I would go with the Ryzen 5. Get the 3600. You're going to be happy. What's the motherboard you're looking at?
The motherboard is called the Gigabyte B450M- Micro ATX.
Yep. That's an excellent motherboard. That's also a recommendation from PC Perspective for their low-end system, the B450M. So that's great. How about a video card? Are you going to go with NVIDIA or are you going with AMD?
I was looking at the 1660 Super because I think those are compatible.
I actually don't know about that. I would think it is, but you better check, make sure, because you want to, you know, there's two things you can do wrong with a video card. You can overbuy. I think in this case, because you're getting a nice Ryzen 5, you're not going to have to worry about that. Always they'll be compatible because PCs are PCs. I don't know if that's a perfect match, but I love the 1660. And the price just dropped a lot because they just announced newer cards. So you should be able to get those fairly affordably. Hang on. I'll go through the rest of the list with you in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is a really good time to be buying, actually.
Because I heard the new graphics cards are dropping.
So. Yeah, they're all of the previous editions, all the TI, the titanium cards and stuff, they're all dropping now because of the new GeForce cards. So that's good. I don't know anything about pairing a NVIDIA card with a AMD processor. I noticed that on the mid-range and high-end systems, PC Perspective does recommend a GeForce card. So I know they'll work. But, I don't know much about it. They like the 2060 with the Ryzen 3600. And on the lower end, to save money, they got a Radeon. I think if you can afford the NVIDIA, go for it.
Yeah, I figured that I could probably, upgrade, some stuff and then have, a good, base GPU.
Yep. I think that's a good idea. So you're saving money by buying a little less expensive one, the 16 series. I think that's fine. What else? How much RAM are you going to put in there?
I'm going to put 16 gigabytes
good.
Of RAM.
That's plenty. And let's see, what else? You're going to use SSDs, I hope.
Yes,
I am. Samsung Evos?
It's a Samsung Evo, and it's 500 gigs.
Perfect. I love those Evos. Really good, consistent, reliable performance. I think they're a very good choice. Sounds good. What kind of case are you getting?
I'm getting one from NZXT, and it's the H510.
Good. Is it air-cooled?
Yeah, it is.
All right. That's fine. Sounds good. Oh, and don't skimp on the power supply would be my other advice.
Fry your computer if you don't get a good...
Yeah, or a lot of times you're just underpowered. Things won't work as well. So get a Corsair or something good. Get a good power supply.
Yeah.
Don't get a cheap no-name. You won't save that much money. You know, Antec, Seasonic, Corsair, those are all fine. Oh, Antec's the case, right? So, good. I think you're going to have a great system. What's the price when you put it all together?
It is $719.
Nice. Perfect. And it's for gaming, right?
Yeah, it's for gaming.
Yeah. I think that sounds great. Anything else you wanted to know about?
No, not really. I have to get a monitor, which it's probably going to be 144 hertz.
Yeah.
I think that'll...
Yeah, high refresh rate's nice on gaming. Yep. Monitors have gotten so cheap now. You should be able to get a good monitor for a couple $100. Mm-hmm. I think you're golden. You're going to keep it all under 1,000 easily.
Yeah. And I've heard that, with this build, you can, upgrade it eventually if you want to,
always.
A bigger
amount
of storage.
Easy to upgrade the RAM. I don't know how many slots that motherboard has, but I'm sure. And make sure, you get the RAM in the right configuration. Sometimes it has to be paired, things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you'll have enough slots to upgrade RAM or just get more dense chips. You might want to upgrade at some point the video card or the hard drive. The only thing that's really locked you in is motherboard processor. Those things usually you don't upgrade. You might be able to upgrade the processor, but usually there's no benefit in doing that. So you're really the motherboard and the processor is what you're buying, what you're locked in on.
Yeah.
It sounds good. They're saying in the chat room, sometimes AMDs can be temperamental with memory, so make sure you choose memory that's well matched to the motherboard. Because the motherboard's an AMD motherboard, it should work fine with a processor.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be pretty good.
Sounds great. How fun. You're going to learn a lot, too.
I've never built a PC.
Yeah, I mean, I generally don't recommend it for most people just because, if something goes wrong, you're going to be the one to fix it. But when you're on a budget and you're young, this is a great way to learn and to really get some sense of what you're putting together. I think it's nice to own it. So you're owning it by building it. So I think that's good.
Yeah.
That's nice. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. What's your game?
My game?
Yeah, what do you play?
I play Minecraft mainly, so I'm going to start a server on that.
Awesome.
And then I'm going to...
I'm running five Minecraft servers right now in the other room.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's for my kid. He's 17. And then it just kind of expanded. I have my own server so that they don't bug me. And then we have a server for the podcast network that was built some years ago. It's a whole beautiful city. Michael, our kid, has built an incredible city with his friends. And then he has a survival world where it's not about building. It's about staying away from the creeps. So I love Minecraft. Yeah. Yeah, Minecraft's a lot of fun. You don't need a really high-end machine for Minecraft.
I didn't think so. Minecraft, I can run that like on my Mac laptop.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a demanding game. But you've built a machine you could play the latest AAA titles on. No problem.
That's all I needed to know to just make sure.
Yeah, you're golden.
Compatible.
You're golden.
All right.
Good job.
Cool.
Take care.
Yeah, bye. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, if you're doing Minecraft and you have a machine like that, you can always, you know, use some mods to get, you know, there are ray traced textures and mods for Minecraft. One of these days. I have a lot of, I'll try new stuff. And if it doesn't work right out of the box, I'll go, let me put a pin in that and come back. I just, you know, I don't have enough energy to debug everything. I always have about five projects I'm working on at the same time. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got smartphones. We got smart watches. We got new Apple Watches. New Apple iPads coming out this week is the rumor. It's about the time they'd normally do it. They last year's event was September 10th. There's a rumor that it might be this Tuesday, September 8th. Whether they'll have an event or not, I don't know. You know, in the past, when they invited journalists to come to Cupertino for an event, they'd send out invitations at least a week ahead of time. You got to book flights, but nobody's coming out anymore. So now I think they just might the day before or even, I don't know what they're going to do. They haven't said anything yet. We do know that we're pretty sure that... because we've seen things like regulatory filings. There's new iPads, new Apple Watches in the mix. Of course, there's always a new iPhone in the fall. The thinking is there'll be a few models, maybe four or even five models released, but Apple's already said in their quarterly results that these will be delayed, which means it could be that they won't do their iPhone event this month. They'll do it next month for the iPhone 12. No idea. Already, though, we've seen new phones from Samsung, the Galaxy Fold 2. They had their announcement this week, $2,000 for the folding phone. Microsoft's new Duo comes out this Friday. That's the one that's folding but with two screens, so it's got a hinge in between. That's going to be an interesting fine phone. I did order that one. I thought, you know, that sounds like I might like that. I got to try that. See, we were always looking for what's the next thing. What's the next thing? We kind of know, you know, there really isn't that much difference between the original iPhone and the 12th generation iPhone. Really not that big a difference. Still a slab of glass. It's bigger. It's faster. Better cameras. But the basic technology hasn't changed that much, the form factor or anything. So that's why these folding phones are kind of interesting. Like, is that going to be something people want? We don't get new stuff that often, really innovative stuff that often. So it's always worth taking a look at. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. If you hear something on the show and you want to know more or you want the link, then just go to the website, techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo, our scribe, is writing it all down. Right, James?
Right.
Saturday. Jose in Modesto, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jose.
Hello, Leo. I have a quick basic question. And it's related to the previous caller, Bob, with the computer and everything, is that what's the difference between a monitor and a TV? I know that there's some basics that monitor could be for a PC and a TV for a TV, right, with a speaker and everything. And besides that, what's the bottom line difference?
There are actually pretty big differences. People always ask me, hey, I got a 55-inch TV, why can't I use that as a computer monitor? And I almost always say, because it's not good enough. So I'll tell you what the big differences are. A TV, in the past anyway, would always have a TV tuner in it. Nowadays, they don't put those in anymore, so that's not that. But they often will have smart components somehow to get video onto the screen. They'll have speakers built in as well. But the biggest difference between a computer monitor and a TV is the quality of the picture. You're sitting a lot closer to the monitor. You often want higher resolution than HD, sometimes even more than 4K on your monitor because it's so close. You know, it's within arm's length of you. You don't sit that close to your television. Your mom told you should never do that, right? Get away from the TV. You're sitting too close. So maybe they don't do that anymore. I don't know. But so TVs tend to be bigger, but the resolution isn't higher. That means the dots, if you sit within arm's length, you can actually see them. Most modern computer monitors, they don't want you to see the dots, the pixels. So they make the resolution high enough so that you can't see them. How many dots per inch is that? Well, typically, a television might be around 100 dots per inch. A computer might be more like 200 to 300 dots per inch. Your smartphone may even be 400 to 500 dots per inch because you hold that even closer. And the whole idea is to not see the pixels so it looks like a seamless picture. There's usually additional circuitry inside a TV that you don't need in a monitor. And similarly, there's circuitry inside a monitor that you don't need in a TV. You can absolutely use a TV as a computer monitor, because most TVs now and most computers have HDMI, so that's an easy way to connect them. It's just that the TV, believe it or not, is lower quality than the computer monitor. And interestingly, the TV is usually more expensive than the computer monitor. That's partly because of the size, partly because of the additional circuitry. TV has to have all sorts of circuitry to kind of control color and so forth. The real difference is the intended use. A television is designed to optimize showing you TV shows and movies, right? Video. A computer monitor is optimized to show you a computer desktop and static images like a word processor. And you want text. A good way to compare a monitor and a TV is to look at text. How legible is the text on your TV compared to the text on your computer monitor? In almost every case, a computer monitor is much crisper, much more easily read. You don't see jaggies and stuff. You look at your TV, especially if you're looking up close, that text is not going to be nearly as crisp. That's why subtitles and titles for movies and stuff are always big letters. You put fine text on a TV screen, it's going to get too blurry to read. So that's a great question, actually, Jose. There is a very much of a difference. You can use a monitor for a TV. You can use a TV for a monitor. But generally, it's best to use the device it's intended for the use. Okay?
Okay, yes.
Thanks for the question. I really appreciate it. I think it's very common to see people want to use TVs as monitors. In fact, Eric in our chat room says he's been using a 1080p 42-inch TV as a monitor for 5 years. That's fine, but text is not going to look as good. If you're a gamer, a video game is pretty close to a TV show or a movie, right? It's the same thing. So if you're a gamer, a TV might not be a bad, because then you get a bigger screen, right? But even then, the refresh rate on monitors is often faster than on TV. On television, you rarely need a refresh rate more than 120 frames per second, but you'll see gaming monitors that are twice that. because you want the smoothest possible animation and motion in games. And then there's also issues of latency. We've gotten really good at reducing the latency on LCD screens, but it's not an issue on television sets. So maybe they're not as fast as a computer monitor. There's a lot. There actually is a lot that goes into that. So that's a really good question. Our show, we're going to take a little break, come back, more of your calls coming up in just a little bit. And also, Dick DiBartolo and I are going to do something fun in about half an hour. 10 years ago, we made predictions in 2009 for what the world would be like in 2020. Dick and I just got the email from our past selves. We'll look at what our predictions are or were for 10 years and how close we came. What do you think? Who will win this one, me or Dick? Leo Laporte. I'm just a geek machine, and I'm working for you today. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Jay's on the line from Providence, North Carolina. Hello, Jay. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Leo. Same to you. I was going to see if you happen to know of a website that is, I'm thinking about building one if necessary, for sharing stories, to allow people to share stories with each other. But the concern I have is that I'm going to have to give them, give out lots of accounts or let them create lots of accounts. So I'm thinking that a normal blog's not going to work.
This is a really interesting idea. I love it, by the way. And I've actually kind of spent some time thinking about it. My daughter wanted to set something up for her kind of peer group, doing something similar. And so that's the key, is how do you give people access to this? You're going to need moderation, obviously. So people want to tell stories. You know, there's a good example of something like this, but it's very heavily manually moderated, called folklore.org, which was created by the original Macintosh team to preserve some of the stories of the original development of the Macintosh. It's a really great site created by Andy Hertzfeld, who's one of the original Mac designers. And he's collected a lot of stories from people involved. I'm guessing, you know, he's written most of the stories, but there are perhaps another dozen or maybe two dozen people who've submitted stories. So I guess that's what the cutoff is. If it were a couple of dozen, manual moderation and work. Do you anticipate it's more than that?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So you don't want to have to be sitting there looking at people's stories and approving it and all of that stuff. So what you really want is a site that will allow people to log in, create stories. Do you want people to be able to edit other people's stories or contribute to that?
They might be able to comment, but I'm thinking, for example, mostly COVID-19 related stories, just how their lives were changed.
Oh, I love that idea. I love that idea. Let me think about how you would do that. My first thought is a wiki. The biggest website, collaborative website in the world right now is Wikipedia, right? Where you have tens of thousands of contributors writing stories. You have editors. The moderation is the tough thing. Now, this would be a fairly easy thing to set up because the folks that do Wikipedia have a parent company called Wikimedia. Wikimedia.org. And you can go there and create your own wiki in the Wikimedia Commons. I think this might be exactly the kind of thing they'd like. Do you want to spend any energy moderating it? Because, you know, the first thing you do, you put something like this up online, is you're going to get spammers.
Yeah, I figure I could moderate it first, but if it takes off into the thousands of people, which I, you know, it's kind of my dream coming true there, but if it does, then I could not handle all of that.
Yeah. Well, then another way to go, it wouldn't be exactly a website, but this is another thing that Reddit is very good at, REDDIT. With Reddit, you nominate moderators. You allow anybody to create an account, a Reddit account, and post. They can post anonymously, so that's something to be aware of. But you have moderators and users who keep an eye on things. And I think Reddit actually does a very good job of eliminating spam and keeping stuff on target. They have a very good, by the way, subreddit, a COVID-19 subreddit, which, as you might imagine, that's going to be a tough thing to run because it's become, you know, very politicized. So what they've done, I think, is a testament to how well Reddit can work, because they have some, what they do is they establish very strict rules for posting. And if you want to see it, it's reddit.com/r/coronavirus. And I think if you look at it, you can see it's a really great place for coronavirus news. Not what you want to do, but I think a really good example of how a community can get together, put up information. One of the things Reddit does that is, I think, makes a big difference, unlike Wikipedia, is it has upvotes and downvotes. So the community reading posts can give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and the posts with the most approval rise to the top. So it really has a way of surfacing quality posts. I think a subreddit might be you could set this up now. The trick is going to be getting, you know, for free, is going to be getting other people to join you, post there, and moderate it. They might even have, I should look, a coronavirus stories subreddit. But one of the things you could do is you could go into the coronavirus subreddit and say, I want to create a subreddit for people who have stories to tell about their experiences during quarantine. I think this is important. This is history. This is history. In fact, I told my kids, keep a journal through this, because you're going to look back in time. The guy who wrote Gulliver's Travel, Daniel Defoe, has a very famous Journal of the Plague Years, but it wasn't COVID. It was the Black Death in the 1600s. But it's one of his most famous novels. So I think that it is a good idea. Or I'm sorry, it wasn't Defoe. It was Jonathan Swift. I apologize, Jonathan Swift. I'm confusing Gulliver's Travels with something else. I think it's really an interesting idea. I like this. So let's see. There's two places you could do. You can most blogging sites, you can have multiple contributors, but I don't think they generally are set up for thousands of contributors. But you could try. You could go look at Google's blogspot.com and take a look at what they do there. I think this is a good idea. Is it to what kind of stories? Is it support? Is it just history? What are you looking to do?
I'm just thinking that people are going to want to share, and are sharing for that matter, but are going to want to share on a larger scale, different unique changes that they had to make to get through the crisis.
Yeah, I love that idea. Love that idea. You should absolutely do it. It was Defoe that wrote Journal of Plague Year. It was Swift that wrote Gulliver's Travels. I apologize. Daniel Defoe wrote Robinson Crusoe, I think, right? But his Journal of the Plague Year is quite famous. His experiences in 1665 during the bubonic plague in London. I love this idea, and I think it is history. It's also support because people read other people's stories and they know they're not alone. I would say a subreddit would be a really good idea. You could create a Wikipedia. The nice thing about a subreddit is you're now on a site where there's a lot of traffic. More likely people would find you. There are places you could promote it. So I think maybe a subreddit. Chat room, you got some ideas? What do you think? Where else would be a good place? Maybe Blogspot, WordPress.com. I think you can have many commentators on that, but that's not free. Tumblr, there's an interesting idea. You could create, well, the problem with that is Tumblr doesn't support multiple contributors, but people can comment. I think Reddit's the best place for that. Honestly do. That's where I'd put it. Let me see. Reddit.com/r/ I think coronavirus, one word. Here, I'll give you a link. This has 2.2 million members. So that's a very large subreddit. And I've definitely followed that subreddit. It's a really excellent place to get coronavirus news and information. And it's vetted. It's not a place for conspiracy theory. It's a place for peer-reviewed scientific articles, things like that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. The phone number coming up, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Scott's on the line from Orange County, California. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question for you.
Go right ahead. Thanks for calling.
I have an iPhone. How can the USB port, when I plug it into the car stereo to listen to the music, it's not working. It just says on the screen of the radio, it just says no service. And it was working fine. It just all of a sudden quit working. How do I reset it on my phone?
That's an interesting question. So you had a Lightning connector that had a USB port on it, and you have a USB port on your car dashboard. Did your car support Apple's CarPlay in the past, or how did it play it? Or just saw, did it say, I see an iPod?
Well, it played the Spotify from my phone to the car stereo just with a USB cord, and then it just all of a sudden I plugged it in, and now it just says no music on the screen of the car stereo.
Right. Yeah, I don't have enough information to be able to help you. I'm not sure what the setup is. So there are a number of ways you can have an iPhone or any smartphone connect to your car. The most sophisticated one is called CarPlay. In the case of Android, it's called Android Auto. And if you have a screen on your car, it will mirror the contents of your phone. Not exactly. It'll only show icons that make sense while you're driving. Things like Maps, Spotify, phone, text messages, that kind of thing. Doesn't sound like you have CarPlay. So that's kind of the most sophisticated way. And that does require, for now, a cable, although wireless CarPlay is coming soon. The next other way to do it is your car head unit has a USB port, which you're plugging into. This is what it sounds like. And it will recognize audio. Your car doesn't say, oh, I see Spotify, right? It just plays the music.
It just plays the music.
Yeah. So it's not CarPlay. It's just, it's expecting digital music to come in through that USB port. Did you recently do an iPhone update?
Yeah, I updated the latest software, the update that was on the phone.
And is that when it went bad, or was it bad before?
No, it was before that.
Okay.
Before that.
And your car, was this a built into the car, or was this something you added after the fact?
No, it was built into the
car. It came with this USB port. What kind of car?
Yeah. Well, it's actually a tractor trailer, to be honest.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. You're driving a truck. You want to listen to your music. Of course. Yeah,
it's a Delphi radio.
It's a Delphi radio. Okay, that's GM. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that could have gone wrong. The cable could be bad.
Fine.
Yeah.
I put a brand new cable in and still did it. And I even tried it in a different tractor and still said the same thing.
Okay, good.
So it has to be something with
the phone. Yeah, good. It may be that Apple's changed how it behaves. You unlocked the phone, obviously, right, before this to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just out of curiosity, when you make a phone call, does it go through the same connection or no?
When I used to get phone calls, I would now what I've done in order to listen to the music is I sync the phone up to the radio so it's wireless.
You do the Bluetooth. And you could play the music that way too, but you don't want to do that.
No.
Yeah. No, the quality would be better if you did it via the cable. It's conceivable. I mean, it happens that Apple has changed something and it's not working. Have you tried completely shutting the phone down? This is, you know.
I shut it down overnight thinking that's what I thought too.
And I mean fully shut it down, like pressed the volume up and the on-off switch until you get the slide to turn off screen, right?
Yes.
And you slid to turn off, and it's off completely now.
Yes.
Okay. And that didn't fix it either.
No. Should I call?
I don't know. Apple? I'm not sure what's wrong. This is so. You didn't change cables before you did this. It doesn't work with the same cable that it used to work with, right?
No. I went on the internet to kind of see, and it just says when it talks about like how do I reset my USB on my iPhone, it just talks about more about the power source, like
right.
It's not charging.
It does. Does it charge your phone while you're plugged in that way?
Yeah.
That's nice. That's really convenient. I think maybe check Delphi's support site or maybe call Delphi, because even though it's not their problem, if it's something that Apple did to change the iPhone interface, they'll know about it, right? Because they'll have gotten 100 calls by now. So it's there's two possibilities. Something's gone wrong or Apple's done something, has changed something. And I just don't know. This is the first I've heard about it. But I would see if Delphi has any. They may say, no, we haven't been hearing about that. In which case, it might be specific to your phone. If that's the case, then the next trip is to Apple. Most of the Apple stores are still closed. But they could very quickly verify if you've got audio coming out of that. You know, one cuckoo thing, but I'm going to mention it because it happens all the time. That lightning port attracts lint. So make sure, shine a light into the lightning port. Make sure that you're getting a full connection in there. And sometimes I'll just take a little canned air and blow it out. You might be surprised how much lint gets in there. And that can do a couple of things. It can stop it from charging, but it also could still charge, but maybe not all of the pins are visible, including the digital audio pin. You also might want to check if you still have your lightning to headphone adapter, plug in some headphones to see if you can hear music through the headphones. Maybe there's something gone wrong in the chips inside of the iPhone. It's hard to narrow this down. You did the first step in narrowing it down, which is you took it to another vehicle with the same Delphi system to see if it worked there, and it doesn't work there either. That's really smart. By doing that and by swapping the cables, you've eliminated all the other possibilities. It's got to be something about the iPhone. Either something's broken in the iPhone or there's been a software change, and either is completely possible. Putting headphones in with the lightning to headphone adapter, try that. See if you still hear audio coming out. Maybe there's something going on there. That's another way to try it. Try it with another iPod or iPhone, too. That's another idea. You want to narrow down all the possibilities. And maybe it's Spotify, by the way. Try other music sources. Try playing music directly from your iPhone. Completely possible that Spotify's changed the interface to the hardware. Apple right now is going through a big flux. There's some big changes coming to the iPhone and the iOS and privacy issues and so forth. There's a lot of changes, and I wouldn't be surprised if Apple did something that broke this. Ask Delphi first, see if they know anything. It's best I can do for you from a distance. But you're in the right track. Try swapping things in and out and seeing what you can see. Website is techguylabs.com. That's a place you can go if you have an idea. I'm looking at the chat room all the time at irc.twit.tv, and they don't seem to know. But if you have an idea, you say, oh, that happened to me, and it was this, go to techguylabs.com. That's free. We divide the site into shows. This is episode 1725. It was hour number 3 call number, I don't know, two or three or four, I don't know, in that hour. You can drill right down to it. You can say, hey, I got an idea, because you can leave a comment there. Another way you can help us out. We're all in it together. Team Tech Guy. Dick DiBartolo coming up. We're going to see what our predictions were for the year 2020 from 10 years ago, right after this.
Hello, Dickie DiBartolo.
Hey, Leo.
It's time for the Giz Whiz.
So, you must have gotten that email, too.
No, I didn't.
Or you kept track of it?
Yeah.
Oh, because I got an email.
I know.
That's hysterical.
You should explain how you did that.
Because I forgot we did this in 2009.
You know what? If it wasn't, and we have to thank David Canario, who happened to stumble upon it this week, exactly 11 years ago.
That's so funny. I guess we signed up. I'll find it here. We signed up for a service, I guess.
You signed up for Future Me.
Future Me.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He was born to be alive. I haven't heard this song in a long time. I love it. We get to bring back disco because this guy, Dick DiBartolo, not only is he Mad Magazine's maddest writer, he's a disco fool. And I'm happy to say he is my Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
You're a gizmo wizard, but today we're going to travel back in time.
You know what? I have to thank a guy named David Canario, who is a fan of Twit, a fan of the Gizwiz, and he said, Dick, I was just looking through old Gizwiz shows, and I found a daily Gizwiz show you and Leo did September 2009, where you were making predictions. So I was making silly predictions. The only one that I made that sort of came true, I said, in 11 years, Microsoft will be up to Windows 55, and it still won't work right.
Well, you were right on the last part.
But you said,
I have a list.
Yes, but you said, I'm going to mail myself a list and have it delivered in 11 years. So, and that happened. So tell us how that happened.
I don't even remember doing this, but I got an email the other day from futureme.org. And it allows you, I guess it's still around, which is, by the way, one thing I would have not predicted.
Me either. I said, they can't be still here. And I went there and they were.
Yeah, write a letter to the future. So, and you can deliver it in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years. I guess we chose 11 years because I wrote this September 1st, 2009. And I sent it to myself because I guess, so you didn't do this, just me.
Just you.
Because you sent me an email saying, hey, we should do our predictions because you found this old show, or our listener did. But then I got the email. Dear future me, I'm writing this from 2009. We still have the internet today, but no flying cars. And Dick was right. Something was very wrong. Did you say that?
I think I did. Sure, I'm sure I did. So, otherwise, you wouldn't have written it.
I have to say, my predictions aren't that good. And I've always said I'm not good at predictions because it's so hard to predict, especially in technology. You just don't know what's going to happen. And if I were good at predictions, I wouldn't be doing this. I'd be buying stocks. So don't listen to these, but this is what I said. Prediction number one, in 2020, we will wonder why we thought Twitter was such a big deal. That was completely wrong. It's become a bigger deal.
Well, with a lot of people, what a lot of people think it's terrible. So yeah. It's not a terrible prediction.
Well, but it is a big deal. And a lot of that's due to the president, right? Who knew? I don't think in my predictions, I would say Donald Trump will be president and he'll make Twitter great again. I don't know if I would have put that in my predictions. Number two, this might be arguably, this is maybe accurate. Facebook will be the biggest internet company of them all. That's not true. Apple is. Google's bigger probably than Facebook, but Facebook's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number three.
And this one is a little wrong.
Completely wrong. Google will still be a search engine. That's, you could argue, is wrong there because it's much more than a search engine now, but no longer dominant. Nope. Nobody's taken their place. Nobody's taken their place. And number four was really wrong. Microsoft who?
Well, I think people still have that feeling about Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft tries, but it seems like they, I don't know if they try too hard. I don't know.
They reinvented themselves in the 10 years. And it would have been fair to say, you know, Microsoft will no longer be reliant on Windows and Microsoft Office for the bulk of its revenue. It's now a cloud company. And I think that trend's going to continue. But it's actually more successful than ever. So I was wrong. I was really pretty much wrong across the board there. What was your prediction?
You know what? Mine were all silly. I can't even remember. The only thing I kept saying as I listened, this is silly, this is silly.
You know what was silly? Me sending an email to myself so that I could actually be on record.
Oh, I think that's great.
But I was wrong. But who knew about, I mean, this is why it's hard to predict. Who knew Satya Nadella would come along, right? Who knew that Google had such a lock on search that no one would be able to beat it even in 10 years? I didn't know that. That was amazing.
Yeah, who knew that Microsoft would hook up with Google
right.
to help to be part of their search engine?
Right. And then, you know, I'll stand by that. We'll wonder why we thought Twitter was such a big deal. I'm still wondering that. I have not stopped wondering why Twitter is such a big deal. That is actually an accurate prediction, maybe the most accurate of all.
Well, I think the thing here is that you can still, none of us remembered that you can send emails 10
I'm gonna
and 15
do it.
Years into the future.
So let's do it again. I'm going to choose a date. Let's do it 10 years, right? So 2030?
Yeah, let's do 11 years. So it's
2031. Oh, September 5th, 20. That seems like such an infinite time in the future. Dear future me. What would I predict? See, this is why I don't do predictions.
It is difficult.
COVID-19 will still be around.
CBS will still
be virtual.
11th year.
We won't have flying cars.
Or airplanes.
We won't have anything will be in the air. It will be 5 degrees warmer than it is now. And it's already pretty
hot.
That's
a given. That's pretty easy. Yeah, yeah.
And TikTok will be the new Facebook. I don't know. You know what? Even more than in 2009, I feel like it's impossible to think what the world will look like in 2031. Don't you think?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there'll be more Bluetooth things that you will think, why in the world? Why do we need Bluetooth thread?
That I'm going to predict. I'm going to write this. Bluetooth will be a thing of the past.
Oh, okay.
Bluetooth
and
who?
And what's replacing it?
I don't know. That I don't know.
Okay.
Bluetooth. Okay. I am going to send this again so I can be humiliated in 10 years. Okay. I think one should be humiliated once every 10 years. Okay. Bluetooth will be a thing of the past. Okay.
All right, I'm going to predict you will have a ring that will have all your credit cards on it. And no matter where you go and no matter what you want to buy, your one ring, it'll be have your gym membership.
One ring to charge them all.
And to charge them all and to get you into places.
So that's your identity.
You won't touch anything in 2031. But if you lose your ring, you're dead.
What do you think? See, this is why it's so hard. Because in some ways, 2031 will be just like today. But in weird, unpredictable ways, it'll be nothing like today. Well, I wouldn't have written in this letter, you'll have been for the last 6 months staying at home and everybody will be wearing masks when they walk around. I would have not been able to predict that in 2009.
I mean, because that's a little part of 11 years.
Apple will be worth $10 trillion. I wouldn't have predicted that. Okay. I wouldn't have predicted that.
Do you predict that you will be sitting in that exact spot doing this exact thing in 11 years?
Yes, but I'll have a different ball to sit on.
Okay.
I predict, people probably don't know that. I'm not sitting in a chair. I'm sitting on a yoga ball. Just so I can bounce.
Yeah.
I like
to bounce. No, I predict I'll be sitting here
with
a different shirt. I will say that.
I predict I will have the same exact necktie.
Oh, okay.
Dick, you're always fun. Everybody should go to gizwiz.biz. That's his website. And don't forget to play the What the Heck Is It contest. There's a brand new one. We're out of time, but I'll have to ask you next week what the old one was. Thank you, Dickie D. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Gizwiz.biz. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.